Oh, hi, it's me, Lily, a frog who lives in a pond and loves to tell stories. You know that I hibernate in the wintertime under my frozen pond while the wolves howl above at the northern lights and the snowy owls hunt for mice and the snowshoe hares hop around on their snowshoes. But me, all the while, I'm cozy and asleep in my mud home under the ice, beneath the dark wintry sky where the stars twinkle all night long and the snowflakes on the ground twinkle back at them from below. I sleep the deepest of sleeps, and as I fall asleep, I always think, oh, this is going to be a long winter, Lily, but before I know it, my toes are wiggling the rest of me awake, and my first thought is always, it's spring already? I would like some nice flies for breakfast. Well, it always takes me a while to wiggle the rest of myself awake, and even longer to swim up through the cold, cold water and to break the surface of the icy pond. Once I do, I start to feel the sunshine on my silvery, greenish-brownish, goldenish skin, and it feels so good that I almost feel sorry for frogs who live where it's warm and never get to feel what it feels like to thaw. Well, by the time I'm thawed out, my tummy is really rumbling, and I don't usually wait for a fly. I eat the first thing that crawls by, which is usually a worm, and when the flies are buzzing in the summer heat, well, I don't love worms, but when my belly is rumbling in the melting spring, I do. Once my belly is full, I start dreaming of the other thing I need. Good stories. And I think about, where can I find a new story? Well, they often come to me when I'm in wild places, like on the bank of a creek or watching chickadees in the woods. I am a wood frog, and I love trees and the creatures who live in trees, too. Well, I mean, not owls, because they're so dangerous, they think frogs like me are delicious. And I'm not fond of minks or otters for that same reason. But don't worry about me. I'm good at disappearing into the forest when I want to. With my silvery, greenish, brownish, goldenish skin, I look just like a leaf on the ground. I live in a valley where it's nice and cool under the forest canopy, but if I want, I can always hop up, up, up from the river valley and explore places where I know I can find good company, good stories, different things to eat and see and smell. Another favorite type of place I love to be is in a garden. Gardens are wonderful places to find stories. If I sit still in a garden long enough, or if I hop around in the garden, any garden, I know I'll meet a story there. Either I'll find one in the garden, or the story will come find me in the garden. Now that I'm thawing on the riverbank, though, I'm thinking of a story I saw unfold last summer while I visited a favorite garden of mine, which is outside a yellow cottage with a thatched roof that has blue shutters on the windows with yellow flowers and bright red hearts painted on them. And there's a pretty woman named Erin who lives there all on her own, except for her hens and bees and, of course, an orange cat named Evie. She spends a lot of time in her garden in the springtime and in the summertime and in the fall harvesting and tidying up. And she comes out every morning after opening up her shutters. She sweeps the stone walkway that leads up to her cottage. And she gets out a little red watering can that never seems to run out of water after she dips it into a barrel of rainwater to fill it. And she puts a little water on everything in her garden, and she doesn't say anything to her plants out loud, but you can just tell. I can just tell when I see her moving about her garden that she says hello and good morning, and I hope you have a beautiful day to each one, to everything growing there. She grows lavender and pumpkins, nasturtiums and geraniums, tomatoes and potatoes and squash, green beans and purple beans and yellow beans and red scarlet runner beans. and carrots and pickling cucumbers and rhubarb. And of course there are sweet peas and hazelnuts. And she grows chamomile and mint for tea, thyme and basil for soups and sauces, calendula for soap making and apples for eating. She grows strawberries and bleeding hearts, which are her favorite flowers, and irises and daffodils and elderflowers and currants and lingonberries. And at the heart of the garden is a pretty pear tree, which always seems to have a blue jay in it, whistling a happy tune. Her garden is the loveliest in all the land, even though it is small and humble, and just up the hill from it there's a great manor where a wealthy woman lives with acres of gardens surrounding her great stone mansion. She has a team of gardeners to care for her grounds for her and a great iron gate surrounding her property with stone lions on granite pedestals that roar at any who pass. Now I'm a frog. I mean, you know that, so you probably also know I can see in ultraviolet. And I know humans can't see the same way I can. Flowers look different to me than they look to you. They have more colors and patterns, and they are a twinkle, as if there are fairy lights embedded in their petals. And I can see in the dark, too. Even when it seems pitch black to you, I can see grass and bees and birds and flies and worms. They're all aglow all the time. And also, I can see emotions. To me, emotions or feelings look like glowing, colorful fruits and flowers. So I could see that the woman in the pretty yellow cottage tended to her emotions and her feelings at the same time as she tended to her plants. And she was kind to each and every one. Every morning the pretty woman would greet her emotions in the morning and wish them a beautiful day. And at night time she'd thank each one for what they did for her. She'd say, "Oh, hello, and thank you, happy. You made me feel so good today. And thank you, sad, too. You helped me say goodbye to and let go of what I can't have. Thank you, calm. You helped me relax and be well. Thank you, restless and excited. You tell me when I need to move. Thank you, tired. You help me know when I need to rest and be still. Thank you, confidence. You help me do things I need to do well. And thank you, shyness and fear. You help me stay safe. Thank you, lonely. You help me know when I need to connect with other people. Thank you, angry. You help me let go of what I can't control. You help me know when I'm full of hot air and I need to let out a long breath. And you help me stay away from what hurts me and change things that bother me. Thank you, cuddly. You help me take care of myself and my orange cat, Evie, too. Thank you, jealous. You help me notice what I might need more of. And thank you, silly. You help me laugh and relax. Thank you, confused. You help me know when I need to focus and pay attention and listen better and ask questions. And thank you, annoyed. You help me know I need to change things. Thank you, bored. And thank you, busy. You help me get things done. And thank you, love and joy and laughter. You make life beautiful, like my garden is. Now, I know humans can't see emotions in the same way that I can, but when the woman who lived in the great stone manor rode past the little yellow cottage astride her great gray horse, the little cottage garden took her breath away. And I knew she could see that there was so much happiness growing in that humble woman's garden, because that is what Erin watered and tended and kept at the heart of her garden, where that is what she put where it would get the most light and the most attention, and so that's what grew there. And I could tell that the wealthy woman, whose name is Beryl, was shocked and upset to discover a garden that was lovelier than her own growing, because she was used to having the best of everything. And the wealthy woman thundered back up the hill to her estate, and she strode through her gardens, and she noticed how, even though they were full of the reddest roses and the sweetest lilacs and fine glass houses full of exotic tropical plants, pineapples and birds of paradise flowers and orchids, and there were cold marble statues bowing down to her, she could see that her gardens couldn't compare in loveliness to that humble woman's cottage garden. And while she was pleased with her gardens before, now she was not. So she gathered her gardeners together, and she told them they'd have to do better. She commanded them to head down that hill with wagons and shovels and sacks full of gold, and to buy up every plant in Aaron's little cottage garden, and to transplant them all in her estate gardens. And the gardeners came back up the hill with sweet peas and hazelnuts and lavender and scarlet runner beans and pumpkins and currants, and even that pear tree with its roots all wrapped up in burlap ready to be transplanted, though the blue jay that perched in it happily flew well away. And the gardeners, they did their best. They really did. They fed the plants with eggshells and coffee grounds and other compost that plants love, and they watered them twice a day. But it was hard on the plants to be dug up and moved like that. And some of them took, but many of them withered away, including that lovely pear tree. And when the woman walked through her wilting gardens, the plants didn't look nearly as beautiful in her gardens as they did in Aaron's. And as she rode past the yellow cottage, she noticed that things were starting to grow back there, even hardier and greener and lovelier than before. "Try harder," she fumed at her gardeners, and they stopped tending the exotic plants in the glass houses, and they stopped mowing the croquet lawn, and they stopped watering the shade gardens. They focused all their attention on trying to make Beryl's gardens look just like Aaron's. But the more they tried, the more the plants that they didn't want to grow there grew. The creeping jenny and the toad flax and the scentless chamomile thrived. All manner of thistles poked their way up through the soil, and pigweed and stinkweed, kudzu vine and giant hogweed and devil's club, ragweed, tansy, burdock, and creeping bellflower just took over. "It must be the soil," said one of her gardeners. "It must be the weather," said another. "Maybe it's the well water," said the third. "It must be, or the way the planets are aligned to the stars. If only there was something we could do." And the woman fired her gardeners, and she knocked on the woman's cottage door, and she made her an offer she couldn't refuse. "Live in my home and tend my gardens, will you? I will pay you more gold than you've ever seen before. And I, in turn, will live in your little cottage and tend your garden." Aaron didn't really want to switch places with Beryl, but she felt she couldn't say no, and the money sounded terribly useful, and so she asked her cat Evie if she'd come with her, and the cat shrugged as if to say, "Well, why not? Wherever you go, there you are." So up the hill they went, though the bees and the hens stayed put, and Beryl moved into the little yellow cottage. And when she did, oh, she reveled in all the happiness in that beautiful little cottage garden. And she got up each morning to sweep the little stone walkways and water the plants. And her hair got shinier, and her back got straighter, and her sleep got deeper. And she felt more and more in peace until she made the alarming discovery that there was jealousy and sadness and restlessness and fear and loneliness and anger and boredom in that cottage garden too. "Well, I must get rid of these things at once," she declared, and she focused all her attentions on trying to dig up and displace the things she didn't want. She forgot to tend the things she did want, and you might not be surprised to hear this, or maybe you are, but the burdock and the creeping jenny and the toad flax and the scentless chamomile and all manner of thistles poked their way up through the soil, and pigweed and stinkweed and kudzu vine and giant hogweed and devil's club, ragweed, tansy, burdock, and creeping bellflower did too. until the garden was just overrun with weeds, and the strawberries and the pumpkins and the tomatoes and the beans just didn't get enough water and sunlight to fruit. The rhubarb, mind you, was fine. Beryl went back up the hill to see Erin in her manor, and I hopped along quietly too to see what would happen next, and the first thing I saw was a blue jay perched atop one of the stone lions on the granite pedestals at her iron gates, and the jay was happily whistling. And inside the gates, the roses were blooming, and inside the glass houses, the orchids were flowering. And the croquet field was lush and green, and Beryl thought she'd been tricked. "You devious, terrible woman," shouted Beryl at Erin. "How did you outsmart me? How did you trick me into trading my beautiful home for your terrible little yellow cottage down the hill? What is your secret?" "Well, I didn't trick you, and I'm glad to trade places again. And it's no secret at all. I'll tell you how to care for your garden." And Beryl turned towards Erin and she listened for what she had to say. And, "Well, I'm so sorry, dear listener, but that's when the biggest, fattest, tastiest fly I have ever seen in my froggy life flew right past, and I hopped along right after it, and I didn't stop until I caught it and ate it and digested it in the sunshine. And I don't know at all what she possibly could have said, but maybe you do."